This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And this afternoon, we're going to talk legislative topics. State Representative Christine Goodwin in studio this afternoon. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. Good afternoon, everyone.
So, I guess, obviously, at the front end of this, though, you're in the House. Talk about the return of the Republicans in the Senate to floor sessions and that whole situation.
So, high drama in Salem with the senators denying quorum in the last few weeks, and they have been in fierce negotiations. President Wagner of the Senate turned out to be a very poor negotiator. The terms and really the essence of the negotiation was to set aside some of the really controversial, extremely partisan bills, and let's focus on the bills that really have good support, bipartisan support, and are good for Oregonians, and let's not force the issue on the controversial. But President Wagner would not have any part of that. His view is, I'm the majority party, it's my agenda. And really disrespected the minority senators in that they have constituents as well to represent, and one party does not represent all those views.
So do you feel comfortable with what you know about what got worked out?
Comfortable. No, I'm not happy. There were some amendments, and because the two controversial bills were 2002 and 2005. So those bills did pass the House, unfortunately, not with my support. And they were on to the Senate, where they have been stuck, and part of their other bills that have been in negotiation as well that are really controversial bills. But those bills were amended, which means they will come back to the House because we have to have a concurrence vote on those. And so they will go right to the front of the line. So the 2002 bill had both the abortion and the gender affirming care piece to it. There is no movement at all in mandating insurance companies pay for gender transitioning surgeries, procedures, treatments, even electrolysis. Everything would be mandated by insurance. That stands as it is. The abortion piece, this was never about the abortion availability in the state, that nothing changes there. Abortion is totally readily available in the state of Oregon. The sticking point was on parental rights. So the bill wanted to change so that a girl under the age of 15 did not have to have parental consent for an abortion. That has been amended. There has been some work on that.
And if I recall, this would have been one of the first states, or maybe the first state in the country, to go as far as the bill was originally written.
Yes, and we felt strongly, or the Senate did. This was mostly their, we agree with them, but it was their argument that these girls, if a girl, say, age 12, is pregnant, there is very likely a crime there. And with sex trafficking on the rise, child abuse, we thought that was really critical that parents be involved. Now, the carve-out is if that provider, with concurrence with another provider in another facility, says, no, we have serious concerns that the family is responsible or is child abuse there, then that can be, then parental consent would be exempted.
And what about in this negotiation, there were other bills the Republicans wanted to have pulled off the table. There were other ones that they wanted to keep in the mix. How did that all flush out?
Well, there's a lot. The bills that, in example, one of the other real bad bills, let's just get the bad bills out of the way, is 3409, which is the climate bill, which is kind of really a cap and trade, bringing it back. It's a huge omnibus bill. They have gotten stuffed this 119 page amendment on this bill. There was really just not enough time for industry experts and the impacted stakeholders to have any conversation about this bill. So it's been very rushed. The language has not been reviewed. Of course, the building industry is very opposed to it because it would add all kinds of regulation and to residential building codes, of course, raise the cost of housing even more, which does not help our housing crisis. All the stuff on greenhouse gas reductions, you know, had significant policy implications. So that is a real bad bill. We will be seeing that this week in the House, I'm afraid.
How fast do you think things are going to ramp up, or have they already?
The Senate side, they're ramping up. So they did achieve quorum yesterday. They are in session right now, I believe. They have enough. Not all the senators are present on the floor. There are enough Senate R's that are giving them quorum. But yes, a lot of bills are being killed right now. Bills are being referred to committee to die. So there's a lot of action. And actually, I haven't been home all morning on my computer to follow things, but my staff is trying to keep me apprised of what's going on there.
And you've got a deadline for ending the session in 9 days.
Yeah, so we sine die on June 25th. So, yeah, end of next week is when session closes.
Do you anticipate being pulled in to meet over the weekend, or is that going to be more likely the Senate?
More likely the Senate, yes. We are not called back. Our speaker has not called us back to the floor until Tuesday, the 20th.
So what was it like being in the other chamber watching all of this go on?
Well, we've been working. This chambers, you know, really are separate. We've been working. We've been finishing up committee work. We have been, my committee in behavioral health, healthcare, has gone on into some informational meetings. And by the way, the senators, many those senators were working as well. It wasn't that they didn't walk out. They didn't leave the building. They didn't leave the state. It's not like that. It was a denial of quorum. They've been participating in committee meetings as well. So they've been active doing all the work that legislators do. They just were not on the floor to take those votes.
So what have you been focused on in particular? Is there legislation that you worked on that is continuing on?
Yes, and I just had a great success on Wednesday on my pharmacy benefit manager. These are the secret middlemen in the drug supply chain, and they are really implementing unfair practices to pharmacies and actually starving out. We've had over a dozen pharmacies close this year and a prediction of another 15. I was brought into this conversation because our local pharmacies in my district were saying, help, we are dying here. So, and the consumer doesn't really know that this is such a complex drug supply chain, but I have been digging into that, learning the complexities of that. And so one of the tricks they do is they claw back fees months later without any explanation. They're aggregated, not itemized fees. And this is killing pharmacies. So my bill would prohibit that. And it was passed unanimously in the House on Wednesday. So it's on to the Senate. It is truly a bipartisan bill.
Are you seeing pharmacies continue to be impacted by the CAT tax?
Yes, of course, because their margins, people, I think the consumer thinks when you write that copay or you write that check to the pharmacy, that that's all going to pharmacy. It is not. It is largely going to these PBMs who make $25 billion a year in profit.
So what about other legislation maybe that would especially impact Douglas County that's out there?
Well, I think the one good win that I can see that will be great for Douglas County is the death tax exemption has now been raised to $15 million, which will help small farm, ranch, and forest properties.
So talk about what that term means.
That means that they are exempt from death tax up to that amount of money. So in those ranches, you know, that, of course, when the death tax is very low, families have to sell ranches and farms and forest assets and so on just to meet the death tax. So that I feel really positive about.
And that one as well, it seems like over time, you know, a lot of fees and things get adjusted for inflation and the cost of living mm-hmm. change. And it seemed like that one was parked you know, decades back, or, you know, when $1 million was a different, you know, essentially it was still $1 million, but it meant something different.
And speaking of that, I had a bill, and so did a few other reps on the House Republican side that wanted to raise that death tax exemption period. I think, I mean, the federal death tax exemption is $12 million. I thought it should at least be half of that, 5 to 6. That didn't go anywhere. Even the reps that wanted a very modest, up to $2 million, $3 million, which is very reasonable, as you say, for all the reasons of inflation, that went nowhere. This was the only death tax exemption that passed.
All right, more when we come back with State Representative Christine Goodwin. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1. Umpqua Valley Live coming up at 4 o'clock. In studio, State Representative Christine Goodwin. A lot going on with the Oregon State Legislature to talk about. And you had mentioned we were talking about the death tax and all of that going into the break. Talk about where the state looks at in the revenue forecast.
Well, the revenue forecast came out better than was expected. Taxpayers will have a return of monies that were paid in surplus, tax dollars that were paid in surplus, called the kicker tax. And that's still SJR 26 is a bad bill that's trying to reverse the kicker tax refund to the taxpayer. And so the Republicans are fighting that fiercely. We think that's a very bad idea, and that when you have overpaid your taxes, you should have a return. Via the kicker tax. Many would like to see that in actual check form versus just, you know, an automatic deposit to their account.
But. Well, and historically it was like that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then along the way, I think the idea was that the cost of time and money that went spent into, to do all
possibly.
That. So that's when that shifted. What about, you'd mentioned the one bill, but what about other things related to gun legislation?
So the gun bills, the 2005 gun bills, were pretty much, almost everything has been struck from those bills. So there was the gun-free zones, where they were trying to create all this patchwork of gun-free zones, and that has been totally struck down. That's not part of the bill. It was kind of a three-part bill in 2005. The other part was, of course, denying handguns, denying weapons to anyone under age of 21. So that has been struck down because it's just flat unconstitutional. The piece remaining is the ghost, what they're calling the ghost gun, which is really to license the serial numbers of gun parts. And so that piece is still alive, and most everybody can live with that. We'll see. There's some grandfathering. There's a lot to that bill. But overall, I still will not support the bill. I think all three parts of it were unconstitutional. But
now, how would that apply to people who already have these weapons?
Well, they have a carve out for like the antique weapon. So if you had those guns before, I think 1968. You know, they would be exempt from that. But to us, it's just sort of silliness. Serial numbers can be, by criminals, can be scraped off, right? They just grind off those serial numbers. So basically, you're making criminals out of law-abiding citizens.
So what other legislation do you want to touch on?
I talked about my PBM bills. I think that's going to go through. The cremains bill, or veterans cremains, that has been languishing in the Senate, but I think that has very full bipartisan support. I was working that bill really hard before quorum was denied, so I think we're going to get through on that one. One of my disappointments, I think we're going to get the VA home. Senator Brock Smith has been working on that and can speak to that a little bit more. But, you know, we want to bring that VA home to our campus, our VA campus.
Are you nervous that, given the fact that you've got a week to slam through a lot of things, that not everything's going to rise to the top?
Right. And I do think we'll see how all of that shakes out. Sometimes we don't know until, you know, the day of when we get our second and third readings. But yeah, there's not as many bills coming from the Senate, so it won't be. We finished our slate Wednesday of all the House bills. So now we will be dealing with some of those, see what makes it our way. All the concurrence, anytime there was amendment, those will go to the front of the line, top of the stack. And then we'll get through the big budget bills, which is the other thing I've been very involved with. I'm on Human Services Joint Ways and Means Sub. That means I'm dealing with the big Oregon Health Authority budget and the Human Services budget.
And how do you see those? What do you see happening with those?
Well, I think the OHA budget has so many concerns. It is quite bloated. I was a definite no on that. An example, $30 million to pay for 300 FTEs over the next couple of years to redetermine Medicaid. So what happened is during the pandemic, nobody could be dropped off Medicaid. So now they have to go and redetermine these people. I think that's an outrage. You already have the employees. You already have the processes in place. I think that was excessive. We also have the Healthy Oregon Plan, which regardless of immigration status, you're entitled to, whether you're an Oregonian or not, if you have a current address in Oregon and you are looking for work, you are entitled to OHP. That is a huge cost, and it's an indeterminate cost, and nobody can answer the question about what kind of caseload we're anticipating there. So a big egregious cost in that budget. The HHS budget I did support because there's some really important programs in that budget, aging with disabilities, intellectual disabled folks. I really, and those direct service providers are not being paid well enough. So I fight the administration costs rising a whole while we are not taking care of the actual people on the front lines taking care of these people. The blind, deaf category is in there, self-sufficiency. So there's a lot of good programs in there.
Now, you have a lot of interest with your background in the whole health arena. Are there other things, health legislation?
There's a lot going on in health legislation. Basic health plan, of course, this redetermination. The bridge plan is the process by when people do fall off, they're no longer eligible, but they are having a hard time getting in affording insurance and the Affordable Care Act. There's going to be a bridge program, but again, extremely expensive, $80 million. We're moving into a basic health plan. I'll just say about healthcare, I know this is really dense subject matter, big budgets, and I'm learning a lot. Anyway, that's what I've been largely involved with.
Is there much in this session regarding infrastructure?
Well, that's one of the reasons we're all hanging. We've all submitted our requests for capital infrastructure projects. So we'll see how that is pretty much determined by the majority party. And they're pretty crabby right now, the senators, for being backlogged, and so I don't know how that's going to flush out.
So just how tense are things, just walking around the buildings?
On the House side, I would say we have kept a pretty good demeanor. I'm not always over on the Senate side very much. I think there's a great deal of tension there. I think President Wagner is really not an easy man to get along with. He's not a Peter Courtney who always sought some bipartisan support. So that's been, they actually had to bring in a couple other senators to really do negotiations because it was getting nowhere with President Wagner, who just kind of drew a line in the sand and said, my way or the highway.
Well, and to have a different governor, a different House
right.
Republican leader, and a different, all the leadership is pretty much shifted.
Yeah, I would say Governor Kotek is still pretty much controlling the legislature. I mean, unless she works closely with those leaders, with our speaker and President Wagner, and, they have to approve of everything for it to really get through.
Are you able to have much interaction with the governor?
She's been in our caucuses on a couple of occasions. I have not attempted to call her directly. I do speak to call the speaker directly on bills and want to know if I can gain his commitment and support on some of my bills I'd like to get through. So he's a very agreeable man. He's a very pleasant man to deal with, but he also has an agenda.
What do you feel like the next week is going to be like for you?
Ooh, I think it will be pretty tense this week. There's conversations, a lot of. I think there are disagreements about whether you stay in the fight, continue to vote your conscience, and to vote the way you see your constituents, your district wants you to vote. And then there's those who just say, you know what, this is kind of senseless here. We are just there to vote through their agenda, or they're going to get their agenda passed through. They've got the 31 votes, or they don't bring it to the floor. So it's real mixed feelings right now. There's a lot of conversation going on about that. And some of the more conservative reps would just, you know, not would choose not to be there. But I don't think you will see, I'm almost positive, you're not going to see a situation where we deny quorum.
So a lot to get through in the next week. And committee meetings, I imagine, are continuing?
No, committees have all ceased. The only thing, well, the committees, rules, revenue, ways and means, of course, those committees are still very active. But most of our committees have ceased for the session.
All right, nine days to go. We'll watch
it.
Thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you, Kyle.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.